You showered for the podcast. You know nobody can smell you through the camera, right? We don't have we're first a video, but we're not the first to smell a vision yet.
You never know. 5-10 years down the road, all this stuff could get converted over to smell a vision, and yeah, I'll be smelling fresh. I'll be smelling like whatever you smell like.
Not great.
That's a good way to start.
AJ.
Yes.
Do we want to discuss the major news and implications?
Yeah. Before we get the elephant out of the room, or elephant in the room, whatever it is,
or the elephant that isn't even in the room anymore.
The elephant that got fired, which is
yes,
Drew Kligerman.
So 2 episodes ago, the following was said.
Better shout out Eraser in Victory Lane. I'm going to be honest with you. If you don't do that, you're fired from the podcast.
Oh, for real.
That is a clear acknowledgement of a requirement that we set out. And the team at Eraser, we have a high set of standards. And if you fail to meet them, well, as you can see, Parker is fired from the podcast. But we have a fantastic replacement, David Shieldhouse, who is now the new assistant general manager for Alpha Prime Racing. I got that right?
That's it. Right here on the shirt. Nope, this side. I know what side it's on.
For Market Rebellion Racing? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, listen, every little bit helps, whether it's Market Rebellion or anybody else. We love them all.
Perfect. There we go. Well, this is the Unnamed E-Racer Podcast, episode 28. I am Josh Mendoza, not the race car driver. You don't know everything else. With AJ Henderson, do you even race on a controller anymore?
Yeah, it's right here.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. The Wired Controller King and David Shieldhouse, who is, what's the acronym? We got Diags Facts.
Diags Facts.
That is David Shieldhouse. This is the Eraser Podcast. Cool.
Why do I know that music?
Why do you know that music?
That song
what is that from?
It's famously known as the intro song for Eraser events or L'Oreal commercials. Even mm-hmm. Parker doesn't like when I say that, though.
Okay, I knew I'd heard that somewhere. I feel like I've heard all the Eraser intros. I think I've been there for all of them. That sounded like something else. That sounded like I've heard that on TV in a commercial before. Is this going to be copyrighted?
No, we only... We bought it. Apparently, the L'Oreal Corporation also bought the same music as we did. And we thought we bought an exclusive right to it, but clearly somebody clicked the wrong box on the website. Oh.
I got to ask you something. I'm looking here at the bottom of the screen for this cool little platform that y'all record on. I'm looking at the waveforms for the audio capture. Josh's go from top to bottom. AJ's are kind of in between, sometimes top to bottom, sometimes small. Mine are just all small. Should we be concerned?
You can turn yours up. It'll automatically remanage and remix the audio if you want to. But if you'd like to turn it up, it gives it a little bit more room.
I'm not touching anything. I just want to make sure, like, we're not going to get through this. And then you'll be like, we couldn't hear you the whole time, but you look great.
Go ahead and turn it up then. Be safe.
I'm not touching nothing.
Okay. All right. You're fine.
Josh's always looks like it's peaking, but it's not. So, I don't know.
Yeah, usually it piques most people's interest. All right, sorry, that was terrible.
Okay, let's talk some.
Gonna racing. Leave now.
E.
Yeah.
Racing. Yeah. So, what happened this last weekend? Anything exciting?
Am I starting this off?
Yeah.
Sure. You're our person in the industry now. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, so we were at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, one of my least favorite racetracks. I've been there once, and if I never went back again, I would be fine with it. We had two rookies in the car. We had Howie DeSavino III in the 44, and we had Julia Landauer making her first start in the 45, which was really cool for her with her background, making her first start. And yes, it was very nerve-wracking because you're sending out two rookies, one who's never made a start before, jumping into an Xfinity car, which is a tall task, having to qualify in on time. And she did a great job, and she did all that. Unfortunately, she didn't get to make all the laps, and we got another tore up race car, which was unfortunate because she really needed to make as many laps as possible in this start to try and not only, and I think she captured this really eloquently in her social media post, you know, the day after. She you know, it's an opportunity to show what she can do to try and earn more opportunities down the road. But more, you know, just for her experience, like getting wrecked by Justin Allgaier really doesn't mean much for Justin Allgaier. He went on to win the race, right? They've got a fleet of cars. He's in the next race anyways. It doesn't really mean much. But for her, it really cut her day short. And I think, you know, it hurt. It hurt in a lot of ways. Howie did a great job. Finished 17th after the two disqualifications and ran a good hard race, you know, got a good finish. So that was a big plus. But, you know, the 45 getting caught up in another wreck kills us in owner's points. We get further away from the top 30, which hurts us in the bonus money, keeps the car from being automatically locked in. So it was good for some reasons with Howie and unfortunate for a lot of reasons with Julia. But we'll soldier on. Just, you know, trying to have a good, clean weekend this weekend in Pocono. Please, God, let us have a good, clean weekend without any drama. Two clean race cars, no hurt motors, and good points days. That's all I ask.
So what? So for looking forward to Pocono, do you have new drivers in the car, rookies, old, you know, what is your guys' goal for this weekend? Obviously, make all the laps as much as possible, I think, is a good goal there. But what else do you guys, what are you guys else looking forward to?
So we've got, again, two rookies. We've got Raja Karuth and Sage Karam driving our two cars this weekend. Raj will have an ARCA race under his belt before he goes racing the Xfinity Series. I talked with him yesterday. He came by the shop yesterday. We talked for a couple minutes. So he'll have a whole ARCA race hopefully under his belt. So that'll give him some good experience going into Saturday. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to go out there and really perform well. He's impressed, you know, in his limited start so far. So I think the expectation bar for him is probably pretty high. You know, I think top 20 is the expectation for him, and he might even make it a little bit higher than that. For Sage, you know, a great story for Sage to go back to Pocono. The last time he was there ended really, really unfortunate, sad situation. And it's been well documented. There's been a lot of really good articles put out over this week about Sage's return to Pocono, what that journey's been like for him through the healing, through the, you know, everything that he's gone through, and to return now in a stock car for the first time, and how excited he is. He looks at it as, you know, so many different things, but I think he's going to get in that thing and rip. You know, he knows the track, so at least he doesn't have to worry about learning the track. He knows it from an IndyCar background, not a stock car background. Those are two very different things, but a little bit of practice, you know, get settled in, make sure he hits his lap in qualifying and he'll be fine. But, you know, perhaps for him, the expectation is run as many laps as possible, try not to get tore up, you know, and the other thing is, you know, you will shift at this track. So to make sure that he hits his shifts, you know, figures that out without tearing up equipment or hurting anything. But I think those are things he'll focus on. If he could do that, he's got a great spotter helping him out, good crew behind him. You know, top 20 would be a great day for him as well. And if we could get some bad luck for the guys we're chasing in the owner's points, we wouldn't complain. But anything else is just gravy on top. But again, taking two rookies to the track for the second week in a row, definitely, you know, I can't speak for Tommy. I can only guess how he feels. But, you know, it certainly keeps you awake a little bit longer at night wondering all the variables, all the things that can happen to anybody, but especially for guys without a lot of experience. When you take two of them there, makes it exciting. We'll see what happens. But for a big track, you know, hopefully they're not all on top of each other. They can just do what they need to do and bring clean cars home at the end of however many laps they run.
I mean, that would be a good goal. I would say, AJ, did you do your homework this week? Did you watch the races?
The NASCAR races? Or are you talking about e-scooter?
No, the NASCAR races. Yeah, not I watched them. We're not part of the podcast yet.
Yeah, I did watch them. I was very impressed by Julia's team. I thought after she crashed, they were done and they got it fixed and she went back out there. So that was very impressive. Yeah, that was my big takeaway from the whole situation.
I can't believe that car kept running, to be honest with you. Like how hard that thing hit at both ends. And I looked at that car a Tuesday when I got to the shop. I mean, it was they'd already started disassembling, but I mean, it was hit hard, real hard. I was driving home from lunch, listening to her scanner on my phone. Just driving down 77, having her scanner up on my phone and MRN on Sirius radio in my car. And I'm listening to her spotter, Clayton Hughes, you know, helping her out. And I hear, hold on to it, hold on to it. I'm like, oh, come on.
Oh, no.
That's not good. And she's like, second place just wrecked us. Like,
yeah.
That's yeah, frustrating.
That was a wild situation. It was very unexpected. There was some dispute on the, about what was said on the broadcast and whose fault it was. And I feel like it was very obviously the seventh's fault. Jeff Burton didn't feel that way, but
I like Jeff Burton. I don't understand how he could even, why it was beat on for so long on that broadcast. And I, you know, again, I was driving home, so I didn't hear it live. I had to wait until later to hear everything, how it was played on the broadcast. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, what do you want her to do? She didn't do anything wrong. And I said as much on Twitter, and I think 99% of the people agreed with that. And even Justin, I mean, how long after he hopped out of the car on the front stretch did Justin bring that up? It wasn't like it went unsaid. He addressed it very quickly, and I appreciated that. I know Tommy appreciated that, and Julia appreciated that. It doesn't fix anything, doesn't change what happened, but I think Justin knows that he made a terrible miscalculation on the exit of four. And ruined, you know, ruined somebody's day that really needed to have a strong day or a full day at the very least. So, yeah, it was a bad deal, but how that could have been painted as anything other than Allgaier's, you know, mistake, I have no idea.
Yep. It was a wild meteorite hit the rear end of Allgaier's car and knocked some downforce down and just got him loose into the corner, right? I mean, there you go.
That's like the guy in iRacing who wrecks you and is like, nah, it was net code. no, the hell it wasn't.
Yeah,
that was that situation. Like that, if we're gonna tie it to sim racing, like that was it was that, or I don't know what's another terrible excuse people throw out when they wreck you in iRacing.
Oh man,
sorry, my cat jumped on my lap.
Yeah, you know.
I saw people been running this other line the whole night. You're the only person that's been running that line or something like that. Yeah, it's like that's not how that works, but okay.
My monitor turned off. Hashtag Denny Hamlin.
Oh, that's a classic. Yeah.
Well, that wasn't the only thing that happened in the Xfinity race, and we would be remorse not to mention the fact that Landon Castle led quite a number of laps during that race, showing a very strong showing for that 10 car, something that I know he's been seeking to have happen to, you know, set, you know, the tone that he deserves to be in that car, and he is out there to win races and get a championship. So that was awesome to see. Unfortunately, the P3 at the end of the day was not going to be reflected on the final entry or the results due to people like me who go in and make sure that the car was legal. They found that it was just Thanks, a little too, that the car, the rear end of the car just went a little too much to the moon and was too high or too low or whatever the rear ride height was that was wrong. So scored with a P38 finish or 36 or whatever the number ended up being, which is unfortunate. Not the way they wanted it to turn out. But as far as I'm concerned, everyone who tuned in didn't watch the inspection process. So a lot of fans probably still think he finished third. And damn right he did. So
he finished third on the track. That's all that matters.
Is that how you look at it? If the fans didn't see it, it didn't happen?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's why they never disqualify the winner. Because if they did, then all the fans would be confused. The next race they tune in and they're like, well, what do you mean? I saw that Kyle Busch won that race. What do you mean he finished 36? I know he didn't finish 36. So
let me ask you this. If Landon's car was legal, how do you think he runs in that race?
I'm not 100% sure, but as far as I'm concerned. The TV showed him running third.
it was cool to see him run that good. Like, they haven't run very well, I think, to the level that they expected this season. And a lot of us, you know, for all of us who know Landon, have supported Landon and were excited to see him jump in that car, knowing what it's capable of and what that team's capable of, I think we expected more than what we've seen this season. Flashes of brilliance here and there, but you know, not the complete package. And this was, I think, the most complete race that he had run all season from start to finish. Was never really outside the top five, you know, for any period of time, and was leading laps and battling hard. That was the most competitive drive I think he's put together the whole year. So that was encouraging. And when he's on that cut line for the playoffs, they've had some bad weeks. You know, they have had some bad weeks, but they've been very lucky. They haven't lost a lot of ground to the people chasing them because the people chasing them have also had bad weeks, like mm-hmm. Anthony Alfredo. Like, I talk with Anthony every week. I was like, man, we could have made up so much ground on the 10 again, and we didn't. And it's like Landon's skating by with bad finishes because the people behind him are getting bad finishes too, but that's not sustainable. So it was really this. That was that's a big swing of points. That's a big blow to them, but it was encouraging to say they were at least running competitively.
Well, it was if he would have maintained a third, he would have been up to 10th in points, and instead he's now still on the cutoff line. Unfortunately, I mean, there's a good distance right now, but you don't want to be focusing on the points differential between you and 13th. You want to be focusing on how many people you have beneath you, between you and the points cutoff. So, I know Landon will do it. He'll focus on it, and he'll do his best to get to that point. And he's going to try and get him and his family as many Shirley Temples for top five finishes as he can. So it's a good, strong effort, and I hope that they're able to maintain momentum and not look at the disqualification as a complete, you know, you can't just write off that performance was solely based on the disqualification, because Justin Allgaier went out and won the race, and he didn't get disqualified. So clearly that there is speed on the track there, even with or without that disqualification, and I think that over time, that team will be able to sit down and focus, and hopefully they can start focusing on that playoffs. We had a cup race, too. The Xfinity race was not the only thing that happened this weekend. However, I am completely forgetting what happened in the cup race, so homework, people.
Everything.
Remind me.
Everything happened.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we had a couple crashed. We had a lot of natural cautions. I think with the stages included, it was like 9 cautions or something, maybe 10.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Busch spinning out on his own twice, which was wild. You had that wild incident on the first few laps with Ty Dillon and Alex Bowman. There's some drama that got spiced up from that.
Let's talk about that Austin Dillon and Brad Keselowski.
Oh yeah, that happened.
That nobody knows what happened to cause it, and like we've all just kind of moved on. Like that's a thing now, and it about damn near ruined both Keselowski and Austin Dillon's day. And we don't really know what happened. Anyone find out anything more on that? Any thoughts?
I listened to Door Bumper Clear and TJ Majors is Brad Keselowski's spotter, and it still sounded like he still didn't know, and I think they recorded that on Mondays, so nobody knows. That was pretty wild. I don't know what Austin is doing. They probably do know.
He knows. He's not going to say anything about it.
Yeah, Austin gave him a little bump. Not sure why. It was pretty wild. And then Brad Keselowski with the biggest like overreaction of all time, body slams him and tries to wreck him into the grass and then cuts his own tire. I thought it was pretty funny. I'm here for it. Well, I'm not here for people trying to wreck each other under caution. You don't want that. But the spiciness was unexpected. But I'm always here for some good spiciness.
So listen, I'm going to keep it straight with you. I was paying attention to it a little bit. Like I said, I don't like this racetrack. I was watching a little bit. I was like, all right, Martin Truex Jr. is just taking everybody behind the woodshed. So I moved on with my day, came up here to my studio, started playing NASCAR Thunder 04 and like zoned out on the race. Like I had it up on my phone. Like I had my phone down here. Like I was, and if you, yeah, I mean, it was playing in the background, it's background noise, but like I stopped really paying attention to it because I just figured Truex was just going to win. Because he had the dominant car in the first two stages. So I'm playing NASCAR Thunder, whatever. And then the next thing I know, like I stop and I go downstairs and I'm like, this race has changed quite a bit. There's a lot of things happening. Christopher Bell's going to win this race. What in the world happened? And yeah, I guess stuff happened, but I don't know. I guess Christopher Bell is an unexpected winner. You know, it's not quite to the levels of Almirola last year, but yeah, the 20 cars has been, I think, the black sheep of Joe Gibbs Racing for a number of years now. They've always been sort of the fourth guy on the totem. And it's a very, you know, that's a stacked garage of cars, those four. Like, being the fourth Gibbs car is still better than most, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's only his second win. And he was one of those drivers that came in with a lot of fanfare behind him. And even after this win, they're like, oh, he's going to be winning a lot more races. It's like, well, he's only won two up to this point. What have y'all been doing for him? Like, why now is he going to be winning a bunch of races? So yeah. I you have to sort of read between the lines on that. I think that he'll be probably a first or second round exit in the playoffs because they're just not that strong of a team comparatively. It took them this long to win a race. They haven't led a bunch of laps. They don't have a bunch of top fives. They've just been like there, good enough. I think it was kind of funny that a week after the pit crew swap, that car goes to Victory Lane, though.
Yeah.
That is very interesting that basically is the point right there. They're like, they have a pit crew swap and suddenly they win a race. And what's very weird is it's with Bubba Wallace's pit crew, who's notoriously, you know, everyone's like, man, they really need to get their act together. They need to get their act together. And then suddenly they swap to another team and they go out there and they succeed exactly when they needed to. And that's just really, really surprises me.
Well, it wasn't like the whole crew, right? It was like a couple of members. I think it was like two or three members.
It was like
two
people, I think. Like,
yeah.
For a tire changer.
That's still like half the crew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. These days, that's still almost half the crew. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, New Hampshire delivers another unexpected winner, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we are running out of times to punch a ticket to get into the playoffs with a win. And I'm looking at the standings right now. As it stands, Kevin Harvick is out. Ninth in points currently is out because he doesn't have a win. And we are two winners away from, I think, basically confirming that you need to win. And if Martin Truex Jr. doesn't get a win, he needs to very quickly get his act together to make up a 115-point deficit to Chase Elliott to become the points leader, because I believe if you're a regular season champion, you are guaranteed entry into the playoffs.
Without a win?
Without a win. I believe that is the case. I don't know, and I could be wrong, but we have 14 out of 16 spots taken by winners, and that to me is kind of one of the craziest statistics just to think about. Just, you don't, I mean, when
think
and you're
the
in.
Schedule. Think about what's left on the schedule before the playoffs start. We've got Pocono, which that's produced surprise winners in the past, has it not? Chris Buescher. Yeah. You know, that could be a fuel mileage race, could be a weather affected race. You don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not supposed to rain. It's supposed to start raining after the cup race is done. So I don't think we'll have a weather race, but never know at Pocono. Weird things happen. Got Indy Road Course. You can always get a strange winner there. Well, you know?
Truex and Ryan Blaney have both shown that they're good road course racers, have won on road courses, both without wins. Currently in, but you also have Michael McDowell.
Right.
He's been performing pretty freaking well, and I think everybody here is surprised by that. And I think it's very possible Michael McDowell could go out there and win that race.
If he doesn't win that, we still got Daytona.
Mm-hmm.
He can win Daytona. Anybody could win a Daytona. You know,
Michigan.
Ryan Blaney doesn't have a win yet, right?
Yep.
And he's right on that cut line. He's one of those drivers that's barely in on points, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he hasn't really been close to winning a race very much.
I mean, you have Watkins Glen, Daytona, Indy Road Course. Definitely are three that I can think that if you're outside looking in, I would start really focusing on. If I'm Brad Keselowski, I'm focusing on places where I don't necessarily need physical car pace in order to make up a lot of time, you know, where I can do stuff. So Daytona is like a clear shoehorn in. Bubba Wallace is somebody that I think of who hasn't won, isn't looking to be in the playoffs this year, who could very easily win. Also, the only Toyota who has not won a race this year. So that's a pretty big like incentive. You
is
have
Truex one?
Truex. Well, Truex is in on points
currently.
So depending on where they're at that point, Truex could have won a race, but he's projected to be in the playoffs as it currently stands. So you have Truex and Bubba. I imagine they're probably going to want to push Bubba if they know that at Daytona, if Bubba wins, Truex can also be in on points. I don't know. It's going to be interesting, but there's a lot of Toyotas in, and only one that's currently projected to be out at this time. So,
yeah, still a lot to play out before the playoffs start. You know, two road courses, a super speedway, two big tracks in Pocono and Michigan.
Richmond. Yeah.
And Richmond, which, I mean, if we go off of what we saw at Richmond earlier this year.
I'm going to fall asleep.
Me and Garrett Smithley were freezing our buns off in the stands there that Sunday. It was a cold, blustery, windy day in Richmond that, and I guess it got cool at the end, but still, I didn't even know. Nobody knew in the stands unless you were scanning. Like, we didn't know there was strategy going on at Richmond. I had no idea. And then all of a sudden things were happening. And it was like, all right, cool. But I still have low expectations for that just based off of what we've seen so far. And they haven't made any changes to the car, so I don't know why it would race any different.
Do you guys think that we will see a person who has won a race be kicked out of the playoffs this year?
No.
No.
I don't think we get the 16 winners.
Yeah. I mean, I think 16 might be tough. 17, we would basically be asking for new winners at Watkins Glen, Daytona, and at the Indy Road Course, which very well could be possible. I mean, not outside the realm of possibility, even the slightest. But I think there's a lot of people who have won a lot of races so far. Ross Chastain and Chase Elliott immediately come to mind as people who could, you know, stop a road course win easily. Kyle Busch is quick on road courses. Chase Briscoe knows his way around there. Austin Cindric, shockingly, I felt like I thought Austin Cindric going into road course weekends was going to be the person to beat. And, you know,
he's good in Xfinity car.
Yeah, hasn't really done a lot with the cup car. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's unlikely that we get that many new winners before the playoffs begin. It would be historic. It's never happened before, right? Mm-hmm. Never seen that in the years that we've been doing this format. It's not to say it's impossible, but it strikes me as unlikely that we get an unexpected winner. Certainly at a Pocono or Michigan, I think an established winner will pick up the win there. But Richmond probably the same. Those really the three wild cards are the two road courses in Daytona. I think, you know, those are your best chances. And what's the likelihood of all three of those popping a new winner?
25%. Yeah, I'd say at max 25 for all three to pop a new winner. I think we'll see 15 winners this year. I think that's pretty likely. I don't know about 15 winners before the cutoff. 16, maybe. 17, unlikely as heck. So, not for nothing, though, we had some more cup news over the last week. The sim racing to reality strikes again. The Chicago Street Course has been confirmed. They are officially murdering one of the most well-attended weekends of the year at Road America. Cup Series will not be responding or returning, at least for 2023, maybe beyond. And instead, they are going to run one of the most... I got to be excited about this, but I'm looking at this layout and I just can't be excited about this. It is a very boring layout for a street circuit. Super unimpressed with the layout. I thought after they saw it in iRacing that they would have realized that it's not the best layout, but it is unfortunately what we have and we just got to be happy with it. So with that sales pitch out of the way, what are Anyone excited about this?
I mean, I like the layout. That's about the one. That's the one thing I do like is the layout. I feel like there's some good braking zones, some dive bombs. I hope it's not as like thin as it is on iRacing. I know I heard they're going to change a few things, possibly, but I don't know. We'll see. I love Road America. I've been there twice. So, David, what do you guys say?
I got a couple trains of thought on this. Now that the news is out, we've all had some time to sit down and digest it. It's unfortunate to see such a well-attended event like Road America go away from the schedule. I know how excited the people of that region were to have Cup Series come there, and the last 2 years it's been, you know, it's been a big show. Haven't heard a bad thing about it, really. You know, I feel like the narrative around Road America has been the experience, the environment, the fanfare first, and then the racing, the on-track product second. And that's very rare to see or hear about a racetrack anymore these days. It's like people were giving the on-track product a pass because it was such a cool event, and there was a lot of fanfare around it. I know a lot of people were mad that it took over Daytona 4th of July weekend and all that, but as far as reaching new markets and expanding existing markets, I think that hit the nail on the head. But replacing it with a street course in downtown Chicago, something that was born out of the sim world and iRacing, just, yeah, that's a big stretch. I have gone on record in saying I do not like street courses. You look at Monaco, you look at Singapore, you know, you look at Long Beach, and I know there's a lot of Long Beach romanticists out there. And it's a cool course, don't get me wrong. But the inherent flaw with street course racing is that it's typically very tight, very narrow, and doesn't produce a lot of good racing because there are very few opportunities to do anything. No matter what kind of car they sling around these places, whether it's an F1 car, Indy car, or anything else. I mean, people have been sending me clips of like Pinty's running street courses, and I'm like, that's not good racing. Like, you're going to finish where you start unless you have a problem or you get wrecked. Like, there are very few opportunities, and you look at this layout, a lot of 90-degree turns, which like reminds me of Baku. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you going to do with a 90-degree turn? These cars have already demonstrated the worst environment for these next-gen race cars are flat tracks. Mm-hmm. It's the worst. It's the worst type of racetrack for them. They have too much grip for that type of surface, but they just have too much grip. Martinsville clearly defined that, and I think we're going to see a lot of that this weekend at Pocono. But you throw down on a street course with 90-degree turns, narrow corridors, and if they miss a braking point, it's going to look like a damn iRacing wreck, all right? Because there's nowhere to go. There's no runoff. At Road America, you have all this runoff. At the Glen, at Sonoma, you have runoff areas and places to escape to and all this. You don't have that in street courses, and creates carnage. So this may be one of those events where people talk about, oh, it was a spectacle. They put a lot of money into the event. It had a lot of cool attractions. And, you know, I was able to walk there, take a train there, you know, whatever. But I think the racing product is, and I've heard a lot of people say the same thing. They know the racing product is going to be suspect at best, probably not going to be great. But the environment, the event itself, is probably going to be first class, which is great. They can have that. But to replace Road America and still have it be a points-paying race when it feels like an exhibition race, just to get into the downtown Chicago, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I mean, there's accessibility-wise, nothing beats a street course because it's right there in the heart of a city. Most of these tracks, you're going to have to drive an hour out of your way to go there, and then it's a whole ordeal. So I have always said the race at the LA Coliseum was by far one of my favorite races to go to because it was so flipping easy to get in and out of that venue. That it felt like I was going to a concert on a Sunday afternoon at my local arena. It was great. Every other NASCAR race that I go to, it's a pain in the butt to get to. So it's a great way to capture new audience. However, at what cost? I mean, Road America was a 3-hour drive from Chicago. I flew in and out of Chicago to go to Road America myself last year. The experience camping out 4th of July weekend, hearing fireworks going off in the distance. There's really, I mean, as you said, there it is about the experience when you're at Road America. It is our national park speedway, basically. You know, go there to Elkhart Lake. You enjoy the all of the opportunities to camp. And it's just like, it's the weekend that I think was really good. And as you said, people are upset about Daytona not having it. Daytona doesn't need NASCAR for 4th of July. It just straight up doesn't need it. Those hotel rooms are getting booked out because people want to come to Daytona Beach for 4th of July. Just, that's what they want to do. They want to go to the beach on 4th of July. Daytona doesn't need to have a NASCAR race to draw people to that beach and that tourist spot for 4th of July weekend. So instead, in August, they now get to maximize how many days out of the year they are booking out a lot of hotel rooms and are bringing in more tourism tax dollars and stuff like that. So in Daytona's mind, it's a win-win. People are coming there no matter what on 4th of July weekend. Road America, people may not necessarily be going out there for 4th of July weekend. You don't really go to Road America unless there is racing happening. And Chicago, it's going to draw people. I just don't know if this was, if we're going to do a street course. I don't think Chicago was the right place for it. I know it sounds stupid, and I know you said it already. Long Beach isn't a great place to go for a, it's not the greatest street course, but at least it's capturing an audience that wants, that is like really interested in what it is, and it has legacy. So you can sell the legacy of Long Beach and what it was and what it has been over the years as one of those crown jewel tracks. You can sell that and make it more exciting. And the first time ever we've been there, or you go like, in all honesty, NASCAR should be working with the FIA and Formula One to try and find a way to make another use out of the Las Vegas Grand Prix track. I think Las Vegas has shown time and time again, it's not that exciting of a race a lot of the times. And
okay. Let's calm down.
I've been there in person, and I don't find it entertaining to watch. Whereas you could take the fall Las Vegas track date and move it over to the street course of Las Vegas and work with the FIA and have a doubleheader weekend. I think that would be the best win. I think win-win for both. The only problem is who goes on the track first? Who is the big main headline? I think NASCAR could concede that they're not necessarily winning in the European market, and this is a way to expose Europeans to NASCAR, and then F1 can work with NASCAR and Liberty Media to make that happen. So, I don't know. Hot takes for the day.
If it's July 4th weekend, and it's a NASCAR race, and I'm at Road America, I can have my camper and I can grill burgers and hot dogs. I can't do that in downtown Chicago. They kick me out if I bring a grill and they start grilling down there. Okay. And it's July 4th weekend, so I'm just not going to go. It's that simple. That's my hot take.
Yeah, to me, it seems like it's harder to capture the casual fan at the Chicago street course circuit versus the casual fan at Road America because of the accessibility of just wandering in there and finding a place to plop down. You know, we don't know yet what the accommodations will be like, you know, for Chicago street course circuit, how that's all going to work. We've seen drawings and a few things, but all that stuff, like it is going to be, you know, high dollar stuff to pay to get into those spots. So like, what is the normal average fan that just wants to see this thing? How do they take it in? You know, temporary grandstands here and there, I guess. If you're in one of the buildings that's near the circuit, I guess you could watch from there. But is that the experience? I don't know. It's just still a lot of unknowns with that. So I said I had two trains of thought. So here's the second one. I think we are at the point as a sport where we have to accept the reality that changing venues is the new norm and that there isn't a track that is guaranteed to get dates on a year in, year out basis for the most part. There's a few that you know aren't going to go away, but I don't think we're going to be seeing tracks stay on the schedule for 5 years at a time. I think that NASCAR will find certain opportunities And even if they're a success by most people's metrics, where it's going to come off the schedule for a year or two in favor of trying something else, maybe they just have, they say, listen, we've got 36 dates. We're not going more than that for points paying events. Some percentage of that, 10% of that, you know, round up to three or round down to three, up to four, whatever you want. Those are going to be floater dates, floater weekends where we're going to try different things, regardless of what's happened, if it's been deemed successful or not. And I think Road America, that weekend, falls into that category, because I don't think you take a race to the streets of Chicago to necessarily capture an audience. I think you do it to expose your product to an audience.
Mm-hmm.
Capturing an audience is a different concept. Fan retention from this event is going to be much more difficult, I believe, than other markets, because to me, it feels like, hey, we're in your downtown area. Look at us. Bye. And that's it, because it's just Cup Series and IMSA. It's not like they're bringing the Xfinity and the Truck Series. It's not like they're bringing anybody else. It's the Cup Series and IMSA. I don't know how many people in Chicago even know what an IMSA is, right? Like, this is going to be a very casual experience, I think, for a lot of people. And so the capturing and the retention aspect of exposing your product, I think, is going to be vastly different than it's been maybe in other test cases. But I think that's what they want, and that's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think also, not to mention, like, let's say NASCAR goes to a new road course in, like, Nebraska or something, and there's somebody who lives 20 minutes from it, and they've never watched NASCAR, and they're like, oh, you know, I'm going to go to this Nebraska NASCAR race, and then they might become a fan. Versus, let's say you go to Chicago, there's going to be, not everybody, they're definitely going to get some new fans. But there's also, because F1 experiences this, and I'm sure IndyCar and these other series that go to street courses experience this, where there's some people who do not want you in their city. They're going to be pissed off, and they're immediately going to have this whole stigma against you, because they're like, oh, these loud cars are in my city for 4 days. I know F1 in Austin, even though they're not in the city, a lot of people were really upset because of the extra traffic that weekend and whatever else. But that's another thing to keep in mind. I don't think that's as big of a deal, but there's definitely going to be people.
It impacts infrastructure. It impacts traffic patterns, you know, not able to use any of those streets for a period of time. You know, people are going to, you know, not like that. I mean, what if they try to do that in, you know, downtown New York, Times Square? You know, shut off areas of downtown New York and run a race through there. People are going to be like, a small segment of people are going to be really enthused about it. Probably the majority of people are not going to be happy. They can't take their normal route to work or whatever it is that they need to go and do, because it's been impacted by something they don't want there and they don't care about.
Yeah.
If my way to work was shut down for like a lacrosse game for 4 days, I would never watch lacrosse, you know?
Let's take marathons. I think marathons are a great example of things that happen in a lot of cities and typically close down major thoroughfares. I don't know about you, but when a marathon happens and I have to greatly change my route, it's not a thing of, I wonder what this marathon's about. Oh, I wonder who's running in it. I don't know. Is this somebody I know going to be running in it? An Olympiad going to be running in it? No, it's great. I can't use this route from this time to this time because I have practically an organized demonstration of people walking and running, blocking my route that I can't do. And now it's one long line that goes 26.2 miles. I hope for God that I don't get stuck making a 45-minute route now 2.5 hours, because I got to go all the way up to here to get around the route. So it's I mean, that's something that happens, and I know it definitely frustrates a lot of people, but fortunately, it's a small section, and it's not a 26.2-mile course that would be blocking a lot, so that's good. Any last thoughts on Chicago? Does anyone have anything else on that?
Heated not until discussion. We know more.
The airport looks pretty cool there.
That's O'Hare it. Or Love?
O'Hare.
Got it. It is cool. It is a cool airport. I have transitioned through Chicago once or twice in my life. Let's see. Any other racing related happenings since We last recorded on Thursday of last week.
I don't know. Has Kyle, anything happened? Oh, yeah, Kyle Busch may not be returning.
Yep. That's looking like a stronger and stronger possibility. People believe.
Where's he going to go?
People are rumoring he's replacing Eric Almirola in the 10 car.
There's some people think he'll go to the 42 as well.
Why would he go to the 42?
I have no idea. No. I have no idea. But some.
Why would he go to the 10?
I would go to the 10 too. Yeah.
What has his house done?
Yeah, I feel like it's in Joe Gibbs' best interest to keep Kyle, and it's in Kyle's best interest.
The thing about it is, why would Kyle Busch make any sort of move that isn't at the very minimum lateral as far as competitiveness goes?
Mm-hmm.
And there, what other organizations, aside from Joe Gibbs Racing, are a lateral move? Hendrick? They don't have any spots open. Who else?
Yeah.
Maybe if he was able to be on the Project 91 team, but I know Trackhouse just bought Chip Ganassi Racing. I'm sure they're not looking to buy yet another charter. They probably spent a lot of money that they don't want to keep investing more and more money because the fruits of their labor is paying off right now. So
I don't think Trackhouse is ready to expand to a third team right now.
I agree.
The cost of the charter is more than they're going to want to pony up. Especially if they're going to have to pay money for a charter, expand the team, which comes with its own inherent costs, and pay Kyle Busch what he wants to be paid.
Mm-hmm.
When he doesn't have a sponsor.
And I don't think Trackhouse needs Kyle Busch. That's the biggest thing to me, is I don't think Trackhouse needs somebody who is... you know, knows how other teams have done things to build up Trackhouse into a better team. Look at Trackhouse and what it's accomplishing with Ross Chastain and Daniel Suarez. Sure, they have some experience, but they're not what you think of when you say veterans of NASCAR. Yet they're out there performing and achieving what many people thought was not possible for Trackhouse this early on in their life.
It's not like they're a new team, though. That's the thing you have to remember about Trackhouse is it's the remnants of Ganassi. When Justin Marks and Pitbull made that move, sure, they can't use the same cars as last year, but they got the people, the assets, the equipment, the space. They literally bought a turnkey, high-performing Cup Series team, which is a hard thing to do. It's not like they came in with nothing. So while it's nice to see their performance and wins, I don't think it's that big of a surprise that they've been competitive, especially with the next-gen car bringing some of these teams closer together. And they run up front, and they're consistent, and it's great. But, yeah, I don't see that as a landing point. I don't see anywhere as a landing point for Kyle Busch other than Joe Gibbs Racing. There really isn't another solution that makes sense. He's not going to take a step down. He's not going to put himself in a less competitive environment. He only won Bristol this year because the two leaders wrecked. Like, he's in a big slump. It's been a year. It has been one calendar year since Kyle Busch won a race.
Mm-hmm.
Is he worth any less money because he hasn't been winning 6, 7, 8 races like Kyle Larson? I don't think so. He's still one of the best to ever do it. And he's still one of the best right now that is doing it.
I mean, you look at, you know, Denny Hamlin, who has won 2 races this year, but is 19th in points right now. Not a great place to be at. Christopher Bell won 1 race. He's been doing pretty good. Martin Truex Jr., who's high up in points, but can't seem to get the trophy at the end of the day. And then you have Kyle Busch, who is struggling. He's doing good, but he's still struggling. Let me see. He's 6th in points. That's 2 behind Truex. I mean, this just overall, Joe Gibbs is not where they want to be at as an organization, I think. That's the most important thing to say right there.
I wanted to bring this up earlier because this past weekend, the Toyotas were on fire. So I'm interested to see if that's just like a flat track thing or if, you know, Pocono, Michigan, these next coming tracks, if they're actually going to be, they're still going to be fast or not. It might be like it was like 2017 or 2018 where Toyota was off all year. And then the playoffs, they won like every race or something. We'll see.
I think Toyota's been slower to figure out the next-gen car than Chevrolet has been. Chevy has adapted to the next-gen car better than any other manufacturer by a large stretch, I think. 2311, Kurt Busch has done a good job. The 45 team has done a good job of figuring things out. They've made Kurt pretty competitive this year. Bubba's had flashes. I mean, hell, he finished third in New Hampshire. You know, they really had something figured out there. But to your point, AJ, is it just a flat track thing? Is it just that one weekend they finally hit on something because they unloaded good and didn't have to change much? And are they going to go back out this week at Pocono and look lost? Like, they just haven't been there like the Chevy teams have. So you have to put yourself in Kyle Busch's shoes and say, what's the path forward to remain competitive and keep fighting for championships if it's not at Joe Gibbs Racing in the 18 car? There's just nothing that makes sense. Mm-hmm. There are a few people that can afford what he wants, right? His salary is going to be one of the highest in the whole Cup Series. And there are very few teams that can afford that, especially when he doesn't have, when Mars is gone. So what do you plug in there? You know, does Smithfield have Kyle Busch money? Maybe. They sell a lot of bacon. Sure. Okay, great. And they've put a lot of money in Almirola. And some would say, argue that they put more money in Almirola than they should have and for longer than they should have. But I think I cannot see Kyle Busch going to Stewart Haas Racing. That would be one of the biggest coups in a long time. And it wouldn't make him any more competitive, I don't feel like, because they, as an organization, have not been very strong with this next gen car either.
I offer you this question just to consider. Can Toyota afford to lose Kyle Busch? Because you're not just losing a driver, you're losing your feeder series team in the truck series. I mean,
they can't afford to lose him.
So,
yeah, I didn't think about that. There's, yeah,
no, they also cannot.
Truck team, there's zero chance he's going to leave Toyota. There's no way.
Kyle Busch brings more to the table for Toyota than a lot of people realize. And some of this I just learned about recently that I won't get into because they wouldn't like that being put out there. But he brings a lot of flexibility and a lot of things that expand what Toyota and Joe Gibbs Racing can do through his business. And that doesn't have a price tag. Like, that is invaluable to Toyota to be able to have that relationship and have another outlet to work through to get things done that they need to get done, especially as you said, Josh, from a development pipeline standpoint. Toyota doesn't have a lot of cars in the Cup Series, right? And they don't have a lot. So, but they'd also have a very limited pipeline because they don't have a lot of endpoint seats. If you're a Toyota development driver, you know, if you're planning to get to the Cup Series, you have six spots available right now, maybe seven in the future. But you also know that Toyota goes through their young drivers. They lose patience fairly quickly, right?
Yeah. How many former Toyota like development drivers are in Cup right now on different teams?
Kyle Busch, you know, if Kyle Busch lost a step, if he, you know, hadn't adapted the next gen car as well as he has, maybe it's a different conversation. And maybe he gets a little different perspective on what he's looking for, where he should go. But he hasn't lost a step. He's still as competitive as ever. He's still capable of winning races and running up front. So I struggle to see any other scenario that makes sense business-wise other than them figuring something out. And it very well may be Toyota just has to step up and foot the bill and really prove that they are committed to Kyle Busch for the long term beyond him just being a Cup Series driver, but a business partner with KBM. And they may just have to foot the bill. And you'll see Toyota and TRD and all kinds of other Toyota stuff on the 18 car next year.
I offer you this little bit. Just a thought. Hear me out on this. There is the idea that Martin Truex Jr. was going to be retiring next year, potentially. And then a lot of people believe that Joe asked Martin to stay for one more year so that Ty can have an additional year to develop in the Xfinity series. There are other drivers that are coming up the Toyota development chain right now that may be a good place for them to fit in Kyle's seat. And Toyota may not want to get rid of Kyle. But maybe, just maybe, they don't want him in Cup Series anymore because it's too expensive to run a Cup Series car and foot the entire bill for it when they could have a driver who has plenty of sponsorship and is willing to foot that bill for a Cup Series ride.
Who?
I mean, there is opportunities with some people in the Truck Series. You have John Hunter Nemechek, who is making who has sponsors and is bringing it. KBM doesn't just have people in those cars or those trucks that aren't bringing cash. So it's better than $0 that Kyle may be able to bring in right now, currently. It doesn't mean Kyle won't be able to get in sponsors. I'm not trying to say that at all. But I think it might be better in line with everyone's best interest to have Kyle running a full season of trucks or something like that to continue to develop.
You think he would do that?
Honestly, yeah, I do.
That's funny that you bring that up, because me and Parker were joking around about that the other day. But he should totally do that for the memes.
I think Kyle, as long as he's in a vehicle and is getting paid to race it, he's not going to be too upset about it. And if he's getting paid by Toyota to continue to run Kyle Busch Motorsports and continue to have a development feeder opportunity available, I think he would be open to the idea. I don't think he would immediately take it, but if it was the difference between not racing anymore and having an opportunity to continue to race and have somebody else foot the bill, I think he's going to take the opportunity to continue to race and foot the bill.
Are they going to? Why would they pay him Kyle Busch money to race trucks, though?
Because he is continuing to keep eyes on Toyota in the truck series and helping, you know, develop opportunities for more sponsors to want to keep the TRD development program going.
You don't pay him his cup salary to drive in the truck series.
No, you don't do that. That's not going to happen. I'm not saying
he's
getting a
cup. He wants the cup salary, though. That's the thing.
He wants a lot of things. He wants that, but currently there's a reason why we're having a discussion about why, you know, the Toyota talks are in such a bad place, as they said earlier this week. So
John Hunter Nemechek doesn't have Cup Series money.
Yeah,
no, he does not. He does not.
$5 million.
He does not.
He's got Cup Series money, maybe Xfinity Series money. We might find out next year about that, but he doesn't have Cup Series money. There's nobody in the Toyota pipeline of development that has Cup Series money right now.
Yep, I would definitely agree with you on that. I'm just thinking it's better than paying Kyle Busch Cup Series money of what he wants when you have a plenty of veterans on that team, Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex, who can continue to develop that vehicle. I don't know. It's just, to me, I'm looking at it in Toyota's sense of like, okay, I can have somebody in here. We'll foot part of the bill. They already have some money. John Hunter Nemechek already has some cup experience. Putting him in the 18 car, he is not going to ask to get paid what Kyle Busch is going to be asked to pay. He's going to bring sponsors who are willing to pay some. To me, that just, there's less of a loss there, but I just don't know. I don't know. We'll have to find out.
David convinced me. I was kind of on the fence earlier about the whole where Kyle Busch. David convinced me he's going to stay in the 18. Because there's zero way, especially after you brought up the whole truck team thing and the whole Toyota Alliance and what he brings to Toyota. Like, I feel like this is, the more I think about it, I haven't read anything about it. I've just heard from what you guys have told me on the podcast. It seems like Kyle Busch wants his Kyle Busch paycheck, and Toyota really doesn't want to pay him that much. And he's like, well, you're going to pay me or I might have to leave. And Toyota's going to be like, Fine. Here. And, you know, that'll be it.
I think ultimately he has the leverage to make that happen. He's earned it up to this point.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I would say he's earned the ability to put their feet to the fire, because he knows there's nobody that they're going to bring in from their roster of drivers that's going to be better than him. They know that Toyota's going to take a significant hit in performance if they put anybody else in that car. And Toyota knows that too. And they also realize, looking at the next 3 years, Truex is on the way out, right? Hamlin's not going to be around for long. And they look at a Hendrick organization that has four young drivers. Teams are getting younger, okay? Stuart Haas will be the next one to make that revolution as well, because Harvick will be on the way out. Almirola is going to be on the way out. They already got rid of Bowyer. Teams have to get younger. These veterans are not going to be able to stick around for much longer, because there's people that are ready for the opportunity, but they also have to look at the long play for their organization of what's best. And you got to get that young talent up to this level and start development. That's why I'm like, I can't wait to see Zane Smith make that jump, because I know he's Front Row Motorsports' golden boy right now. He is their best prospect, right? He is their really who they are going to try to build around for the future. Will they be able to keep him, or will another Ford team or another manufacturer lure him away with more money? Who knows? But when you're building an organization, when you're forecasting for the future and looking ahead, trying to build a nucleus, I think right now Hendrick has laid the template out for what you want to do. You lock in four really good, talented drivers.
You don't let them go.
Mm-hmm. And they develop already there. And you renegotiate as time goes on and you make those deals. But you have to have a nice young nucleus. And a lot of these teams are on the back end of a lot of great drivers' careers, especially in the Toyota camp. They're one of the oldest driver rosters in all of NASCAR Cup Series, right? So there's going to have to be some hard decisions made eventually. But I don't think you can do it all at once. I think they have to sort of figure out when these moves are going to be made. But I don't think you can disrupt everything and shake everything up by letting a Kyle Busch walk out of everything. That just I would like to think they'd let a Martin Truex go before they let a Kyle Busch go, just because Truex, as great of a driver as he is, doesn't bring all the other stuff to the table that Kyle Busch does.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention this best case scenario, this will only be an issue for like a couple more years until the new TV deal is done and the teams may not have to rely on sponsorship as much. So especially with that in play, you definitely don't want to get rid of them.
I don't think we're going to find out the answer here today. And I feel like we beat this horse pretty dead on the idea of where he's going to be. I would just say Daniel Ricciardo is looking like a strong contender for the 18.
Why? Because he's not going to have a ride next year?
Yeah.
McLaren seems to be having an issue retaining drivers at the moment, seeing as Alex Palou doesn't know who he's racing for next year or if he's racing at all. So that'll
be interesting. He's going to race for both.
Yes, at the same time. Yeah. We're already in over an hour, and I feel like we haven't actually discussed why we brought you onto the pod.
Yeah, let's, David.
Hi.
You have made a transition from sim racing to real life racing that is a very weird transition and not the standard way to go about it. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your position and what you're doing for Alpha Prime Racing.
So I am one of two new assistant general managers for Alpha Prime Racing, along with Dion Williamson, who goes by Rocco, but his real name is Dion. Dion's got a great background in NASCAR, like 18 years in the sport. Pit crew guy for Hendrick. I mean, he pitted for Jeff Gordon. You know, he's involved in Rev Racing, Drive for Diversity. And so the two of us together are like the layer down from Tommy Joe Martin's now in Alpha Prime Racing. And Tommy's trying to build his team up from what it is right now to make it a more well-rounded organization, as any small business does. He needed to add a layer of managerial to it, because right now he is responsible for everything, all the day-to-day stuff. And he wants to try to break away from that a little bit and focus more on growing and developing his race team, his business. And he can't do that when he's bogged down by a lot of the day-to-day minutia. So, you know, he wanted to start a second tier of employee, if you will, under him, between the shop guys and him in that managerial level. And so that's where this role comes in. And so a lot of people are like, well, why two? Like, why don't you just have one person do it, right? How do you have two people doing this? Well, Dion and I come from very different backgrounds. Dion comes from a background, again, deeply rooted in the sport for the last 18 years and, you know, with a lot of different big organizations, Hendrick included. And so he comes with a skill set unique to him and experiences unique to him. Whereas I come into this with my professional background in accounting and finance, business strategy, leadership, you know, everything I've been doing for the last 6, 7, 8 years in my current career.
And 24 hours of Lemon Driver. That's a big part of it, right?
Yep. He definitely excluded that from anything he said as to why, but yes, I have to think so. but also I do have a background in the sport as well, which, you know, is something that, you know, I don't talk about a lot and still surprises people when they hear this, but I worked in NASCAR back in 2011 with the Siegs when they were still a truck series team. I was a mechanic and a spotter for the 93 truck in the 2011 season. And so while it wasn't a managerial role, it definitely exposed me to what it's like to work for a national touring series team, albeit a small team, which I like. I like small teams. They're fun. And I've been around racing for a long time at the local level. And after I was done with the Siegs, you know, I sort of fell away from it. But sim racing, I was always sort of kept me connected to it in one way or another through the people. And certainly over the last few years, as you know, my popularity grew through streaming sim racing when COVID happened and, you know, all that went down, that put me in a position to really start to get to know people and build relationships. And it resulted in me moving here to Charlotte, you know, damn near a year ago now, which is crazy to think about. But certainly without all that stuff, I don't think this opportunity presents itself to me. And so Tommy had posted on Twitter that he was looking for somebody in this role. He was announcing the role. Well, I didn't even know that that tweet existed. I was streaming. I think it was Monday Night Racing or something like that. I was streaming. And then when I got done streaming, I looked at my phone and there's a DM from Tommy Joe. And backtrack a few. Tommy Joe and I have interacted a few times. He's seen me at the track because I'll go to the track. Now that I've been here in Charlotte, I've gone to a lot of races and I hang out with, you know, the Pickle Gang, George Ball fans and all them. Like, I go to the track, I hang out with them and they pit for the 44 car. So Tommy has seen me around the track. Like, he's seen my face. He knows who I am. And we interacted a little bit during the Monday Night Racing Championship live event back in February, whenever that was. He was doing something with Market Rebellion. They were filming a video and he interviewed all four of us championship drivers. And so I got to interface a little bit with him there, but I never really like sat down and talked with him a lot. Like, I think he knew that I wanted to be involved and I liked his team and I knew people there, but they're just, I don't know, nothing was really there, which was cool. But to see a DM from him, he's like, "Hey, if you still want to get involved, I think this role would be perfect. I think you're the perfect guy for this role." I'm like, you messaged the right person. Like, I'm just that weird guy that hangs out at the track for really no reason at all, who does sim racing. But he really wanted me to be a part of it, and we talked a little bit. And listen, I would be lying if I said that an opportunity like this wasn't something I dreamed about, especially given my current pursuits professionally of knowing business and accounting and finance and organizational strategy and stuff like that. To have a NASCAR team owner approach you and offer this sort of opportunity is unheard of. That just doesn't happen, especially in motorsports. That doesn't happen. But to be able to see a race team from this side of things and learn about it, learn about the financial aspects of things and how it all works and the some of the unique stresses that a small team goes through, and it's been so delightful to experience it. And you know, I've joked about it, it's like playing NASCAR Thunder 04 career mode in real life. Like, And there are some similarities, and Tommy's a big gamer. That's something a lot of people don't know. Tommy Joe is a big gamer. Like, okay, he's 3 years younger than me, which I was shocked to learn. He's younger than me, but we're about the same age, right? So we grew up playing the same video games. He loved playing sports games like Madden and, you know, NASCAR Thunder and all that stuff. He loved the management side of it. That's something he's really passionate about. And we were talking about this last week. We were talking about our motors, and We don't lease motors through ECR. He owns all of his own motors. And we were talking about it and trying to like plan out which motors go to which car for which race. And we were talking about certain motors. He's like, "Yeah, this motor is like an 85. And I just looked at him like, "Are you talking to me in NASCAR Thunder terms?" Like, "Yeah. You get it, right?" Like, "Yeah, like that's pretty cool." But It's honestly, it's a dream come true to learn from somebody like Tommy, who's a self-made racer, family team. You know, his parents were so helpful with his whole career, and they got out recently, partnered up with Cesar Baccarella and Alpha Prime to keep the dream alive. But, you know, he's really the active manager of this team, and he needs somebody that he can trust, that he can download his brain into. And so he can move on to doing other things within his business and know that the things that he does now are going to get done by somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I come in. And I spend a couple of days a week up at the shop. Tuesdays and Wednesdays, I'm up there. I'll be at the track on weekends more often than not for the rest of this season. But, you know, I have a notebook. It's over there on my desk. But I mean, I sit there all day and I just write. I just write things down as he talks. Take notes, you know, write down dollar figures and people's names and processes, you know, for filling out entry blanks. Like, how do you fill out an entry blank to enter a race car into a race? If you don't do it by a certain date, you don't get any points. Like, it's just that simple. No money, no points. Tough luck. You got to do it. Like, mm-hmm. how do you set up the rosters? Like, who's going to be there working, taking care of travel, hotel, rental car, getting that out to the team? Again, mapping out engine usage because we don't lease our motors. We have our own motors. And so we have to figure out, okay, well, we know we have these motors here. Well, we've been in a bad streak of motors getting blown up, destroyed, melted, damaged, which makes it really tough. So it's playing a lot of different logistical strategy games to make this whole thing work, trying to figure out where money's coming in, when it's coming in, who do we owe money to, paying payroll, because, you know, people work there, and everything else that it takes to run a race team. It has been fascinating. I love it. I want to do more of it. It's a part-time thing right now. If it became a full-time thing, I'd have to make a pretty big decision to leave my current full-time job and career in the accounting world to take on what could be one of the most unique and exciting opportunities anybody could have ever asked for, especially somebody who's primarily known as just some sim racer, right?
Well, then I'm curious. You must be really looking forward to F1 Manager 2022 then, right?
I can't wait. I cannot wait for that game to come out in like a month, dude. When that game got announced, like, okay, Motorsport Manager, I have lost so many hours of my life to that game. That is one of the most wonderful games. And then I saw this beautiful, beautiful specimen of a trailer for this game, F1 Manager. I was like, I broke one of my cardinal rules. I pre-ordered it. I tell people, don't pre-order video games. Bad things happen, but I pre-ordered it. Sorry, do better than me out there, ladies and gentlemen. Do as I say, not as I do. And I watch these trailers that they release. Just I'm going to lose my life to this game, and I can't afford to do that. But it's what I love. I sink my teeth into it. I don't care if I get to drive the car. That part's fine, whatever. But the management aspect of it, oh, inject it right into my veins, please.
That's awesome. That's so hilarious. I said that as a joke, but it honestly, it makes sense because it's like, this is, you are really doing real life Motorsport Manager almost in a sense, that bring this back to gamer and sim racing terms. It's sounds a lot of like what you would do in any management game or what have you.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I like to look at it that way just because that's the closest thing I relate it to. And I think people like to relate things in terms they understand best. And that's really how I look at it. Certainly with bigger ramifications, no reset button, no reload save point or anything like that. If you make the wrong choice, you make the wrong choice. And that comes with its own consequences. But honestly, this was not an opportunity I was going to say no to. I'm extremely humbled and thankful, for the opportunity to work with Tommy Joe and learn from someone like him. All I can hope and all I can strive for is that me being a part of this organization, this team, helps it. Has a positive impact on the people who work there and can help Tommy Joe lead this thing where he wants it to be in the future. That's all I can hope to accomplish in my time there. And I will be taking this as seriously as I've taken anything. You know, it's a second job. That's the only way that I can look at it. And it's I know it's not going to be all rainbows and sunshine all the time. It's going to be tough decisions, and I'm going to have to deal with some stuff that, you know, you don't have to worry about if you just stay as a fan. But damn it, how am I going to say no to an opportunity like that and not do it, dude? Like, it's just, I won the Monday Night Racing race this past week, and Blake McCandless interviewed me. He's like, oh, you know, it's a good week to be David Schildhouse, huh? And I was like, dude, it's not just a good day. Like, it's been a good week, month, year, couple of years. I'm very thankful for it, but it doesn't happen if I don't make the move out here to Charlotte. And that's something that I am very glad that I did. I miss being out on the West Coast with you, Josh, sometimes.
Me
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. We just need to get you here. But it doesn't happen if I don't come out here to Charlotte. And I lay awake at night, like, asking myself, is this real? Did this really happen? And it did. And I'm very, very excited about it. And I'm definitely going to maximize this opportunity. I can promise you that.
That's really cool to hear that. I mean, there is a lot of people who look at things like this and be like, oh, that's a lot of risk. You know, you moving across the country, you know, are you sure you're ready for that? But sometimes it just proves that you just got to make a risk. And if it doesn't pay off, it doesn't pay off. But if it does pay off, look at this. I mean, would you have these opportunities if you were still out in Arizona on the West Coast? No, I highly doubt it. It's
no,
I know that struggle. I mean, there's opportunities that I would have had if I was out on the Charlotte, but here I am on the West Coast and I don't have these opportunities because I'm not there. So
I remember a phone call with Parker a couple of years ago when he asked me to be a part of, you know, at the time, Burton Kligerman Esports. I remember, you know, walking around my apartment in Phoenix, you know, super excited to talk to Parker on the phone and have that opportunity. You know, and that was the coolest thing in the world at that time. And now here we are with this, which is, you know, a far cry from that. But it just, everything has just been a step forward. And, you know, where this opportunity can lead to, who knows? But I'm going to enjoy it to the maximum while I'm doing it now. And I just hope that, you know, we can continue to do great things and maybe get some more fans out there cheering for the 44 and the 45 on a week in, week out basis as well.
I will definitely be doing that for sure. So I'm gonna give you your a first hard decision you have to make. So in Las Vegas, I need a couple of hot passes for a couple of buddies and I. I heard you're the guy to ask. No, just kidding.
I'll be there. I will be in Las Vegas.
Perfect. Awesome.
If you want to be if you need a hookup, Joshua Mendoza, I can do that for you.
Oh, great! Awesome. Wow. I'll make that happen. I will. I'll make sure
and to get people. To you.
Yeah, I plan to come to Vegas. I think Vegas and Phoenix are the two races that I have for sure left on my calendar this year that I really want to go to. So hopefully I'll see you at both of those.
I'll be at a wedding in Chicago for Phoenix weekend. I'll be there for a wedding and I'll be scouting out that street course.
That's really interesting. I thought of all races that you would be at, the back at Phoenix would be the one that you were at because it's closest to where you've lived for so long and you want to be with people. But you have a wedding in Chicago instead, and there you go.
Well, it'll have to wait till next year, you know.
Wait, that's scouting okay. out the street course. Wait, is that a leak? Is Xfinity going to the Chicago street course?
No,
is
and you know,
David going to Cup? That. Is Alpha Prime Racing going to Cup? Hold on, we got breaking news here, folks. Alpha Prime Racing to Cup.
They bought the 18 charter. Oh my goodness.
We've connected all the dots. Kyle Busch to Alpha Prime Racing confirmed.
There we go.
It was right in front of us the whole time.
How did we not see it?
Unbelievable. Things you're only going to hear on the unnamed E-Racer podcast.
Oh my goodness. Well,
is that the name of this show?
We haven't named it yet. And to be honest, I think at this point, it's like a brand thing that we can't change our name for it. So if you come up with one, actually, do you have a name for it? Maybe we can name it right now.
Right now, this is going to be known as the Two Guys and Another Person podcast.
Hey, there you go.
Interesting.
Can we name it whatever that, that what's the thing you called David earlier? What was it? The Dia Facts. What is that?
Podcast? The Diag Facts for short podcast. There we go.
Yeah.
I like it.
You can do that.
So for everyone who's not in the Discord chat, which is everyone but us.
Literally everybody listening to this.
I named the Discord chat the episode 28 with special guest David, quote, I am an assistant general manager for an Xfinity team, Shieldhouse. So that's what Diag Facts stands for. So
it rolls right off the tongue.
Right?
Yeah, very easy.
Hold on.
Whoa!
I think that's the outro music. That's the out. What? No, that's the outro music. It's an hour and 18 minutes.
Oh, we're ending it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I think that's.
I come back.
Can you come back?
Yeah.
I think if Parker wants another week off, and he's on administrative leave for not suggesting E-Racer in Victory Lane, you're always welcome back. Actually, yes.
I would come back. I would come back. This was a great experience. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. On your way out, there's hors d'oeuvres and all of that, so you can, you know, get a little snack and drinks, what have you.
Tell you, Parker's putting that money that he won in Mid-Ohio to good use.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, we got to end this before we get into another conversation. Bye, everyone.